All right, well, no opening music, but you know what, Lisa? We don't need any music. Who needs any music?
I can sing it for you.
We don't need no stinking music.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah,
dun,
there you go.
Dun, dun,
it
dun,
is
dun, dun.
8 minutes after 11 p.m. It's program 333 in the series, the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. And you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
We have parts 4 and 5 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Well, because we left everybody on a cliffhanger early this morning.
And we also have Boston Blackie, my favorite radio show of all time. Boston Blackie's coming your way. We're also going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, Lisa. Cat's Pride kitty litter.
We do this once every month. We're a week late, but it still counts.
Yeah, Dan Jaffe will be here in just a few minutes. But first, let's see. Well, what do we have? Okay, you know, let's talk about the Classic Radio Club. The Classic Radio Club is something that we have generated for our listeners. It's a website. Just go to classicradioclub.com. And what's there?
Well, what you can do is have radio shows on CD sent directly to your home every single month. So you get 10 shows on 5 CDs. It's a club. You get it every single month. They are in pristine quality, and you get a great selection chosen with love by Carl Amari. And I can't think of a better way to treat yourself or to give as a gift once a month getting these 10 radio shows. I know we're having a little trouble waiting for Dan, but
yeah.
Anyways, check out the Classic Radio Club. We know you're going to love it. This is literally a labor of love from Carl and from me to our listeners, because we know how much you would appreciate this. So check it out at classicradioclub.com.
Okay, sounds good. All right, before we, I guess Dan, we're having a little trouble getting a hold of Dan. Is he there yet or no? All right, so we're having problems
we'll
with the phone.
To him.
So this is what we'll do. We'll start things off with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Do we have yours truly, Johnny Dollar, ready to go if we want to start that?
Okay.
All right. So last night we played three episodes 1, 2, and 3 of the Lansing fraud matter. And we have part 4 for you now. Let's go back to December 15th, 1955. Here is the Lansing fraud matter, part 4 on yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Jim Carter, Johnny.
Hi.
How'd you make out with Hillary Franks, the agent who sold the policy?
He's worried, he's scared, and he's already doing everything wrong. I left him about an hour ago to think things over.
Mrs. Kennedy's fighting back.
What do you mean?
Her lawyer served notice on us an hour ago to pay up on the policy or else.
Just a bluff.
Yeah, but this wasn't. She got a court order and made the coroner release her brother's body. She took it right to the crematorium. Exhibit A is a pile of ashes by now.
Uh-oh.
Our next step is to contact the State Insurance Commission and have them order us to pay off or show cause. We'll have to act fast.
Maybe I better go back to see Mr. Hillary Franks.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. Location, Tucson, Arizona. To the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Lansing fraud. $50,000. And by now I was sure it was fraud. Expense account, item number 8, $5, stenographic services. I dictated a hastily composed letter to the State Insurance Commission advising them that Worldwide was withholding payment on the claim of Mrs. Arlene Kennedy, pending a complete investigation of the circumstances of her brother's death. I enclosed copies of the original physical examination and the coroner's autopsy findings, pointing out that in our opinion it was impossible for James Lansing to have successfully passed an insurance examination in the first place. I enclosed copies of statements from the examining physician, Dr. Mayhood, and the members of his office staff, all of whom were unable to identify the body of James Lansing. Expense account item 9, 52 cents, postage. I sent the letter to the state capitol special delivery in the hope it would arrive there before Mrs. Kennedy's lawyers took the anticipated action. After that, I drove back over to the office of Hillary Franks. He was the same as I left him an hour before. a little shaken, but still unable to realize quite what was happening.
Yes, Mr. Dollar?
Mr. Franks, I wonder if you've got anything to say to me.
Nothing, Mr. Dollar.
I was hoping you might want to make a statement.
Oh, about what?
Mrs. Kennedy's attempting to defraud your insurance company?
I don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Dollar. I sold her brother an insurance policy. I don't even know Mrs. Kennedy.
There are a lot of things about this you say you don't know. You want me to lay it on the line?
If you like.
All right. Someone else had to take that physical examination for James Lansing 2 years ago. I think you arranged for someone to do it, or you helped Mrs. Kennedy arrange it. I think James Lansing was insured on that basis. I think he was insured with a clean intent to defraud. Lansing's health wouldn't permit that kind of insurance. Right now, our Los Angeles men are looking into Lansing's activities there. Somewhere along the line, they're going to turn up a medical history that'll show Lansing was already dying when he came to Arizona 2 years ago. Now, do you have anything to say, Mr. Franks?
No.
I think you're being very foolish. If it isn't clear how serious this can be with you, it's noted that you arranged for Lansing's physical examination.
There's nothing incriminating in that.
How well do you know Dr. Mayhood?
Oh, slightly. The physician is supposed to be an impartial third party. When a client has to be examined by a physician for insurance purposes, I send him to Dr. Mayhood. That's all. Dr. Mayhood sends me a Christmas card every year. I sent James Lansing to him.
Just like any other?
Just like any other.
Oh, you worry me, Mr. Franks. You don't object to my questions or get ruffled when you're caught lying. I've given you time to think and time to make a statement regarding your part in this matter.
I resent all this, Mr. Dollar. I've been an insurance broker for a good long time, and no one has ever questioned my integrity.
And I think that's what you've been banking on, Mr. Franks, your reputation. Well, I've been questioning it ever since I got here, and I still question it. You couldn't have known James Lansing without being aware of his drinking habits. I'm sorry for you, Franks, but there had to be collusion here with a beneficiary, Mrs. Kennedy. And you're the logical party.
Dollar...
You arranged for someone else to take that examination for Lansing. Somebody who could pass it. Now, I've given you a chance to talk to me, but you refuse. Now we'll see how you like talking to the police about it.
What?
I'm going to swear out a warrant for your arrest.
Dollar,
I'm going to charge you with attempted fraud and collusion. And I'm going to swear out a warrant for Mrs. Kennedy, too. You're going to jail.
Oh! Oh!
In the 3 minutes it took me to recover from the blow from the paperweight and get my breath inside of me and my feet under me, Hillary Franks was well out of the way and out of sight. About that time, Jim Carter walked in.
Hey, what happened to you?
Hillary Franks. He got scared, swung a paperweight at me, and beat it.
Well, if he's playing rough, I don't want to take any chances.
No, put that phone down. He hasn't admitted anything yet.
Smacking you on the side of the head is admittance enough for me.
No, I want a statement. I think I can get one.
You have to find him first, and he's running.
He won't run far, Jim.
What makes you so sure?
Hillary Franks doesn't know how to run. It was exactly 3 o'clock in the afternoon then. At 3:25, I was back out in Catalina Vista knocking on a familiar door. And the same familiar things began to happen all over again.
What do you want?
I'm here to tell you about the trouble you're in, Mrs. Kennedy. Hillary Franks gave it all away.
Gave what away? Who's Hillary Franks? What are you talking about?
About that insurance policy that was written up and issued in your brother's name. You're the one who stood to gain most by your brother's death after having someone else take an insurance examination for him. But you had to have help to pull it off. Hillary Franks helped you. For what reason or how you got him to do it, I don't know. But I do know a man with a 17-year record as insurance broker is ruined.
You're crazy. I don't know anybody named Hillary Franks. Now get out of here.
Oh, stop it, will you? I told him how he stood in this matter a half hour ago, and he socked me with a paperweight and beat it.
I've had about enough of
you. But he isn't going to run far. Principally because he doesn't know how to run, Mrs. Kennedy. He'll cool off, and he'll begin thinking about all this business in a new light. A few minutes ago, it dawned on him what he'd done. He kicked his whole lifetime right out the window. He'd been found out. He's lost all around. And he's going to be mad about that. And you're the one he's going to be mad at because you got him into it.
I told you, I don't know anybody named Hillary Franks. That's the last time I'll say it.
He'll probably want to kill you, Mrs. Kennedy.
What?
I said he'll think about all this and he'll probably want to kill you. Do we talk now?
I don't see why. I've done nothing wrong.
Who did you get to take that physical for your brother?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You got your brother drunk enough to sign the insurance papers, didn't you?
I had nothing to do with my brother taking out life insurance and naming me his beneficiary. That was his business. Now that he's dead, it's my position to receive the payments. That's all.
Okay, Mrs. Kennedy. We'll get it all from Hillary Franks.
Yes, why don't you do that?
In the meantime, I hope you sleep well, knowing what you've done.
You'll never be able to prove any of these things you're saying. Never.
And for 24 hours, it looked as if Mrs. Kennedy might have been right. There was no way to involve her unless we had a statement from Hillary Franks. And he was still missing. I set up a watch on Mrs. Kennedy's house, and Jim Carter kept an eye on Hillary Franks' place. About 10 o'clock that night, Jim Carter drove up.
Hi.
Hi.
Any action?
No. Mrs. Kennedy's been in all the night. No one showed up.
Mm-hmm.
How about Frank's place?
No. No one there when I left an hour ago.
You'd think he'd come back for a suitcase or some money or something.
Yeah. Hey, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
I called in the police.
Oh.
When they were worldwide, I filed charges of attempted fraud and collusion against him. They issued a warrant a half an hour ago. He's on an APB and all the local bulletins.
Well, I suppose you had to do it, Jim.
Yeah. We'll let the police handle this part from now on, huh?
How about Mrs. Kennedy?
We'll keep an eye on her, too.
Did you file any charges against her?
Not yet. We need a statement from Franks.
Jim.
Yeah?
What would you do if you were Hillary Franks?
I'd try to grab an airplane. Maybe go down to Nogales, cross the border. Look up a friend, borrow some money. They'd get out and keep traveling. What?
He won't do anything like that.
Won't he?
He'll find himself a place to sit down and think. In the end, the cops won't find him. He'll find us.
Want a bet?
By the next morning, the police had still been unable to locate Hillary Franks. I left Jim Carter in the room on a long-distance call to the insurance commission, advising them of the events up to date. Drove out to Hillary Frank's office. I noticed two police officers loitering across the street as I walked in the front door.
Yes?
How do you do?
Are you another policeman?
No, I'm not. Have they been bothering you a lot?
If you aren't a policeman and you know all about this, what do you want?
I want to help Mr. Franks if I can. I'm Johnny Dollar, Universal Adjustment Bureau. You're his secretary?
Yes.
How long have you worked for him?
12 years.
Do you like him?
What? He's always been a fine man. I don't believe any of these things about him, and I don't see
why... What's your name? I think he said Maria?
Maria Vano.
Maria, I'm not going to ask you any questions about Mr. Franks. I know enough about him now for my purposes. The rest he can tell me himself. Maria, I may be able to help him stay out of jail. I can do that if I talk to him.
Well, how do
I... My name's Johnny Dollar. I'm at the Pioneer Hotel. Remember that.
But Mr. Dollar...
I don't know whether he's phoned you yet or not. A man like that's going to need help, money. I'm not asking you if he's contacted you. But listen to me carefully. If he does phone you or contact you in any way, ask him to phone me. If you ever respected him or if you want to help him now, please ask him to telephone me. Thanks. I drove back to the hotel and waited for results. Another 12 hours went by. Hillary Franks was still missing, and Mrs. Kennedy was still refusing to admit anyone. Finally, about 11 o'clock that night, my phone rang. Johnny Dollar. Hello.
This is Hillary Franks.
Where are you?
Never mind. Dollar, they know all about me back at the home office, I suppose.
Yes.
I'd like to explain some things to you so you can pass them on. I'd like the people back there to know why I did it. Well, before I leave town...
You won't get far. The police are looking for you.
Oh, I can get away, all right.
Mr. Franks, Worldwide doesn't want to prosecute. The notoriety would be bad for them. If you'd make a statement, sign it, I think I could talk them into dropping the whole matter.
Maybe we'd better get together.
Come on over.
Oh, no. No, I'm not that crazy. Do you know how to get to the San Javier mission?
I can find it.
In 15 minutes?
Right.
And Dollar?
Yeah?
It's right out in the open. If you bring the police, I'll use a gun. I bought one this morning.
All right, Mr. Franks.
There'll be another intriguing episode of the Lansing Fraud tomorrow.
Tomorrow, $50,000 worth of murder. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure and join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
That's Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, from December 15th, 1955, part four of the Lansing Fraud Matter, starring Bob Bailey. We have part five in just a few minutes. We are having issues with our phone line. We are trying to get Dan Jaffe on the phone to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter and talk about our main sponsor here, Cat's Pride. But we're still having some phone issues. We'll hopefully get him on in just a few minutes. First, these words. All right, we are having phone trouble, so Dan is going to let us pick the winner. We'll do that after the news. We're going to pick the winner for another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. But right now, it's Cat's Pride oldies but goodies.
Those oldies but goodies.
So to go along with our five-part Yours Truly Johnny Dollar series from December 12th of 1955, we're going to play an oldie but goodie that was a top hit during that time. It is called Autumn Leaves by Roger Williams.
Are you telling me that was the number one song in 1955?
I said it was a top hit of December 1955. What do you think? I'm making this up?
It was a great song.
It was a great song,
anyways.
Did you
like my piano playing? I taught him everything.
Yeah, you are talented.
Yes, thank you.
Carl, a famous sex symbol during that time was James Dean.
What's that?
A famous sex symbol during that time was James Dean.
There was a pregnant pause in there between those two words.
Yes, there was. And the microwave oven was invented.
The microwave oven was invented?
I don't think you heard anything after.
You know what they should have done?
James Dean.
They should have taken the master recording of that song, put it in the microwave.
He made a lot. No, he made a ton of money off of that.
Roger, did you like that song?
I love that song. I remember that song.
He remembers that song.
I was there for it.
It actually sounds like Leaves. Roger plays the piano in that song. He's in the orchestra.
I hit the C sharp.
The C sharp.
The key.
I'm going to go for a B flat.
Oh, my gosh. All right, we're going to have news, and after the news, we're going to pick our winner, Cat's Pride. Kitty litter winner of a year's supply of Cat's Pride, thanks to our main sponsor here, and thanks to Dan Jeff.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Welcome back to the show. It is 11:37. Thanks, Roger. And in just a few minutes, we're going to listen to part five, the conclusion of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. We were going to have Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Oil Dry, parent company to Cat's Pride, on the phone lines with us, but our phones were out of order. They're trying to reboot them here, feel really badly. But Dan had already chosen a winner prior to tonight, and we have that winner. We're going to announce the winner right now. This person, right now we have our winner, and Dan picked this winner, and this person is going to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. The winner is Christy Dinkins of Chicago, and her cat is Tommy. Christy, you are a big winner. You're going to get a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Congratulations. And we thank Dan Jaffe. We thank Oil Dry. And we thank Cat's Pride. Right, Lisa?
And we mostly thank Cat's Pride, not just because they are so generous in giving out a year's supply of Cat's Pride cat litter, but mostly because of the superior product and what they do for dogs and cats across the country.
Absolutely. And if Dan was here, he would talk more about that. But he'll be here next month, and we'll talk all about. They were just on the Ellen DeGeneres show. They doubled the amount of donations in one telecast. They were a sponsor on the Ellen DeGeneres show for one week, and they doubled the amount. It's like millions and millions of pounds.
The amount that they are donating to shelters.
Folks, this is a sponsor. If you have a kitty cat and you're not using Cat's Pride in the green jug, we really, really hope you'll switch, because not only is it the best kitty litter, but they're doing things, amazing things to help cats all across the country and all over the world, really, with donating to these shelters.
Yeah, they're a very generous company, so we hope that we can have your support.
And congratulations, Christy Dinkins of Chicago, Illinois. Her cat, Tommy, is getting a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. All right, it is time now for part five, the conclusion of the Lansing fraud matter from December 16th, 1955, on yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Jim Carter, Johnny. Anything on Hillary Franks?
He just telephoned me 2 minutes ago.
What?
I'm on my way to meet him now and try and make a deal. I told him if he'd give me a statement about the attempt to fraud worldwide on Lansing's $50,000 policy, I'd do my best to have them drop charges.
Well, you didn't make any promises, Johnny.
I couldn't make any promises, Jim, but I'll do my best to see that the charges are dropped if he gives me that statement.
Well, if he gives you that statement, I'll help you. Where are you meeting him?
At a place near here.
He knows every cop in the area is looking for him.
Yeah.
Be sure he doesn't give you a bullet, kiddo.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense
expense account, submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar in Tucson, Arizona, to the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is a further accounting of expenditures during my investigation of... Well, it was a case of 50,000 insurance to one Arlene Kennedy, unless I could prove my point in the Lansing fraud. Expense account item 10, $10, cab fare, from my hotel to the Mission San Javier to talk to Hillary Franks, the insurance agent with no future ahead. I used a taxi cab instead of my rented car because I didn't want to waste time searching around for the Mission. It was a few miles outside of town over rough and broken desert roads, an ancient missionary church standing stark against the moon-filled night.
Here we are, mister.
Good. Here, keep the change.
Don't you want me to wait for you?
No, I'll be back okay.
Not many places to call a cab from out here.
Yeah, I know.
One of the Padres, your friend?
No, I'm new around here.
You all right, mister? You feel all right? You loaded or something?
No, why?
We're coming out here at midnight.
Well, it's just a whim, friend. Don't worry about it.
Have it your way. Mister?
Yeah?
You gonna meet somebody here or something?
Why?
I just saw a guy standing over by the bell tower.
Oh, thanks. Good night.
Over here, Mr. Dollar. Careful, Dollar.
Hillary Franks had a .38 pointed right at my chest. In the bright moonlight, I could see that he was still wearing the same clothes he'd had on 2 days before in his office. He needed to shave, and judging from the circles under his eyes, he hadn't slept much. He was pale and shaken. A gun wobbled in his hand.
Anybody with you?
I came alone.
Did you tell anybody you were meeting me?
Jim Carter. He's been working the case with me.
Did you tell him where?
No. And if you don't need that gun, Franks, put it away. I just came here to talk with you.
All right.
Thanks. Want a smoke?
Thank you. Why did you talk to Carter? What did he say?
He said he'd help me try and have the charges dropped against you if you give us a statement. Now, you have two of us on your side, Mr. Franks, if you want to cooperate. Do you?
I want to straighten out what I can, Mr. Dollar.
Well, now's the time to do it. What was your deal with Arlene Kennedy, James Lansing's sister and beneficiary?
I met Arlene Kennedy right after my wife died. I guess I was very low.
Oh, that's perfectly natural.
I became interested in Arlene because we had a great many things in common. So I thought. I mean, she was a widow and had no one except her brother, James Lansing, in Los Angeles. And we went together, and eventually I asked her to marry me. But she laughed at me.
Why?
I guess I'm not an exciting man, a witty one, or even an interesting one, Mr. Dollar. Mrs. Kennedy made me feel as though my whole life had been hopeless, useless. Raising children, selling insurance. She made me feel as though I'd miss a great deal in life unless I married her. What is it? What do you want from me? What do you want from life, I'd ask her. And she'd only laugh at me.
Go on.
I just can't tell you how desperate it made me feel. I loved her, Mr. Dollar. I wanted her.
Did she ever answer your questions?
Oh, many times. She pointed out that her trust funds pay her over $700 a month for life. And she knew that my commissions and salary as a broker came to about the same. Oh, Mr. Dollar, we could have lived very comfortably on that kind of income. But Arlene talked of traveling, of Europe, of clothes, and, oh, I don't know, things her family had been able to afford for her once, many years ago. And she said she wouldn't marry unless we could look forward to that kind of life.
She wanted $50,000 in cash instead of money just trickling in every month.
That's about it.
When did she get around to the proposition, her brother's insurance?
Her brother came here from Los Angeles one day. The doctors there gave him a year or two to live. Oh, yes, he was pretty shot. Been drinking for years. He'd used up all his money, a long time before. He asked Arlene to help him. She paid his apartment rent and gave him enough money for liquor. And then one day she came right out with it. She said she was investing in him. And he was a good risk.
because she knew he'd die. That's how she put it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Arlene said all I had to do was see to it that her brother had a nice fat policy. He was going to die. Why not cash in on it? I must have been crazy to even think about it.
How did you work it? I mean, how did Dr. Mayhood pass him?
I paid a man $100 to go to Dr. Mayhood's office and take the physical for Lansing.
What was the man's name?
Oh, no, I wouldn't tell you that, Mr. Dollar. He's not involved in anything.
All right, we'll let that go. Once you arranged for Lansing to become insured, you and Mrs. Kennedy just planned on waiting for him to die.
That was the general idea in view of what the Los Angeles doctors had said. Once I'd done it, I mean, gotten him insured, it was too late to turn back.
Did you want to turn back?
Yes.
What did Mrs. Kennedy say about backing out?
She thought I was weak and afraid.
Oh, then things weren't so good between
you. Oh, they never were, Mr. Dollar.
The idea was to wait for Lansing to die, collect the $50,000 and get married, huh?
I suppose so, yes, but once he was insured, she talked less and less about our getting married.
You're leaving something out, Mr. Franks.
Huh?
Didn't she tell you exactly what kind of a position you were in? Didn't she fix it so that you couldn't make a move? Legally, she'd done nothing wrong. It was you who had arranged for the physical. You who had made the application for insurance in the name of her brother.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, she was clear about all that. And she told me so every time she felt like it.
When you write down what you just told me and sign it, we can hold it over Mrs. Kennedy's head to prove attempted defraud and collusion. Now, would you do that, Mr. Franks?
Yes.
Then I guess we'd better get back into town.
All right.
Come on, Mr. Franks. We walked 3 miles over to the highway, flagged down a car, and got back to the hotel about 2:30 in the morning, got Jim Carter out of bed. Enclosed fine notarized statement of Hillary Franks explaining his part in the matter regarding policy 678JN23L. Before he was finished, Carter had already telephoned the Tucson police, telling them that the charges were being dropped against Franks and that he was no longer a fugitive. Then he placed a long-distance call to Worldwide's president in Hartford.
Jim Carter, sir. I want to ask you not to prosecute Hillary Franks in this matter. Yes, sir, he's given us a complete statement about the whole thing. I don't think we have to go any farther than that. Well, look, the guy made one mistake, the first one in 17 years. He suffered enough for it already. Yes, sir. Dollar feels that way, too. Yes, sir. I think it's okay, Mr. Franks.
All right. I thank you.
What are you going to do, Mr. Franks?
Well, I'm sure I'll never sell insurance again. I think I'll close up and just move away. Far away. Thank you. Poor guy.
Oh, let's clean up the rest of this and get out of this town.
Sure, Johnny.
Hillary Franks pulled out of Tucson that afternoon. When Mrs. Kennedy was shown a carbon of the enclosed statement of Hillary Franks, she instructed her attorneys to withdraw the suit against Worldwide. Expense account, item 11, $75, hotel and board while in Tucson. Item 12, $402.15, plane tickets, Tucson to Hartford for Carter and myself. We were scheduled to leave at 1:30 in the morning. 2 hours before plane time, I dropped by Mrs. Kennedy's house to have her sign a release of all claims on the insurance company. And for other reasons.
Please help me.
I carried Arlene Kennedy to the couch and I did what I could for her. I phoned the police and told them to bring an ambulance. After that, I began looking around. I found a dark stain on the window still leading outside to the back of the house. On the floor, a blood-stained letter opener. There was no gun in sight anywhere. I decided if I had been stabbed with a letter opener, it would be easier to try to make it out the back way than risk the street that was bound to be full of policemen any minute. I was right. Hillary Franks was on a ledge of rock that rose above the back of the house. I ducked behind some cactus plants.
Get away from me!
You know I won't. You know, I wouldn't when I let you walk out this afternoon.
Johnny Dollar?
That's right. Now put that gun away and come on off that ledge.
Get away! Go away!
You missed by a mile. You don't know anything about shooting a gun. Come on down.
Stay where you are. Don't do anything foolish.
I'm coming after you.
I'll shoot.
Good shot, Dollar.
Can you walk?
No.
Why did you do it, Mr. Franks?
I came back to see her tonight. She laughed at me. Said if we had gotten the insurance money, she was planning to run away with someone else.
Oh.
She just used me all along.
Mrs. Kennedy was dead when the police got there. Hillary Franks died en route to the receiving hospital. Item 13, $15, hotel, one more night in Tucson. Expense account total, $1,121.13. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another exciting story beginning next Monday night.
Next week, a quick trip to New York, to the bright lights, the glamour of Broadway, with its theaters, its actors, and, some very bad actors. You might even say, killers. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Mary Jane Croft, Vivi Janis, Gene Tatum, Hi Everback, Barney Phillips, Russell Thorson, and Howard McNear. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
That was Roy Rowan speaking. He just wanted you to know that.
I know that's Roy Rowan.
Roy
it's harder
Rowan.
To say it, though.
This is Roy Rowan speaking.
You have to say it three times, though, in a row.
Roy Rowan, Roy Rowan, Roy Rowan.
Exactly.
Not bad, huh?
Not so bad.
Yeah. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. That is part five of the Lansing fraud matter from December 16th, 1955. That's all five chapters of that Yours truly, Johnny Dollar marathon. We began it last night, just concluded it. And in our next hour, it's Boston Blackie. You don't want to miss that. We'll be right back. You won't want to miss the big news. We're gonna make a big announcement.
I've got something to say, but I will say
I'll let Lisa say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but
after the news.
After the news.
Yeah, before we play Oldies But Goodies.
Roger's
and
waiting with bated breath.
We play Boston
my
Blackie.
My breath is not bated. Sorry.
I don't even know.
Your breath is something, but we won't say what it is.
Carl's got a mean streak, huh, Roger?
I keyed.
All right, well, it's time for news. Stick around because in our next hour, Boston Blackie, you won't want to miss. I think when Roger did a recreation of Boston Blackie, he was the bad guy.
Yeah,
well,
I was.
Like, hey, yeah.
Roger's
I was
the one always who done the it. Bad guy.
Did you talk like this? Hey, Blackie, get
no,
over
I was
here, Blackie.
Because I was a businessman.
Oh, you were.
So I was really above board. Like, how dare you accuse me of? And then somebody
did you
tried
do it
to,
very hoity-toity.
I wasn't hoity-toity.
No,
but I was very direct and all. You know, and then somebody tried to choke me.
Mm.
Like the guy was being accused, tried to choke me.
Really, my
Roger,
hero.
Sir Carl's not nearby.
My hero.
Yeah. In fact, believe it or not, I think
thing.
I'm wearing the same shirt that I wore that night on the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, seeing you rotate amongst three, it was a 33% chance.
Oh, my
that's
gosh.
All right. I've washed the blood out of it.
All right. Well, Boston Blackie in the next hour. We have a special announcement. Don't miss it. All right.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
Welcome back. It's hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. And we are going to play our game. Well, it's not a game. Gosh, why do I keep calling
it's
it a game?
It's just a segment.
It's a segment.
But should we divulge the
it's
news
cat's
now?
Pry, right. Oldies, but goodies.
Those oldies, but goodies remind me.
So the song that we're going to be playing for you for our Oldies But Goodies segment is called, and you may not snooze during this
Does it have vocals in this
You'll have to wait and see now, don't you? Carl's been a kind of moody tonight, kind of cranky. Yes,
not
you
at
are.
All. Not in the
Anyhow,
least.
It's been a long, long time by Bing Crosby with Les Paul and his trio.
Kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time. Haven't felt like this, my dear, since I can't remember when. It's been a long, long time. You'll never know how many dreams I dreamed about you, or just how empty they all seemed without you. So kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time. Then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long time. Haven't felt like this, my dear, since I can't remember when. It's been a long, long time. You'll never know how many dreams I dreamed about you, or just how empty they all seem without you. So kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time.
The great Bing Crosby.
It's been a long, long time.
Yeah.
Long, long.
Very long, long,
long time.
Long time.
And during this time period, it was the debut of Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Wow, 1955?
Yeah.
Wow, Casper, huh?
Yeah.
I remember watching those cartoons
I as love a kid. Casper.
Oh, yeah.
The Friendly Ghost.
Sure, he was friendly.
Although, you know what?
What?
That's actually not necessarily correct.
You goof?
It's not actually a goof, but we changed some of the dates around and we rearranged some of the...
It was for the Cloak and Dagger?
It was for, I think it's for Vic and Sid, so it might be 1945, actually.
How could that possibly be?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look it up.
All right.
Any event.
Lisa goofed.
I didn't goof. Anyhow, here's the story.
Lisa goofed.
It's going to be a very long, long time before we play another oldies but goodies. So the good news is if you weren't enjoying our oldies but goodies segment, you won't hear.
You know,
let me finish.
I'm just going to say that.
No,
hang
don't
on.
Say anything yet.
I was just
no, say, don't
I
talk.
I just say
nope,
one thing.
Nope, nope, nope. Just, Can I finish? Thanks. If you weren't enjoying the Oldies But Goodies segment, then this is your lucky day. If you are enjoying the Oldies But Goodies segment, that's okay because we're going to move on to a new segment.
Right.
Okay. Am I
just
going to
say this? I was just going to say, this is a live radio show, right? We try different things. I think most people are not enjoying this.
You might be right.
I think people, you know, we had a different segment. I really enjoyed when we would pick songs for each other. Like, here's a song that I think, you know, exemplifies
Lisa. It really works for a few weeks, though.
And
how many songs
I thought
can
it was
you
a
pick
I thought
that
it was
exemplify
fun.
Me?
I think people liked it. It was pretty fun. You didn't think they did. So
I did for a short time.
Yeah.
And then it became kind of the same. How many times can I play your Too Sexy for you? I mean, how many times can I find sexy songs?
Right. So here's the thing. So we decided to do this
Oldies But Goodies.
But goodies. And I think people are kind of falling asleep,
you know,
during the
song. Some people aren't liking it. And then I get texts that say things like, oh, my God, that's a song my husband sings to me. We've been married 40 years. Oh, my God, that is my mom and dad's very favorite song, that kind of thing. So
right.
No matter what we do, we have people that love it and people that don't. We're going to move on from Oldies But Goodies. I think you're going to be happy. Here's what we have planned. It's going to start this Saturday. So we waste no time.
Yeah. Coming up next week, we're going to be giving away prizes again.
Yeah. So we're going to be going back to callers in. We're going to be going back to giving away prizes, theater tickets and all sorts of great WGN prizes, weather makers and things like that. So the name of our segment is Cat's Pride, Real or Ridiculous. Carl, you're like mouthing the words while I'm saying them.
I'm liking this.
You're mouthing my words. You're just going crazy over here. Cat's Pride, Real or Ridiculous. I am going to choose a movie or TV star. Somebody very famous. I won't pick anybody esoteric,
and
I promise.
Could it be from the 40s or all the way to today?
It could be from any time. It could be from today or earlier than today.
Okay.
And I will write three interesting statements about that particular celebrity. And all of those statements are either real or ridiculous. The person who calls in will have the opportunity to choose whether the statement is real or ridiculous. And Carl will be the listener's lifeline.
Yeah.
No matter what, because this is how we roll here at WGN, you will be a winner. If you call in and you play the game, real or ridiculous, you will be a winner. So it's just for fun. If you get one, two, or three correct, we think it's going to be a lot of fun. Did I miss anything, Carl?
You know what, Lisa?
What?
Perfection.
Thank you.
Absolute.
If you have any questions about it.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Actually, I could have.
You probably could. If you have any questions about it, text in. I'll be happy to answer. We are going to start Saturday night. I will write three.
Cat's Pride, Real or Ridiculous.
So are these statements real or ridiculous? And the best part is you get to call in and you get to win prizes again.
All right. Do we play commercials or do we? Yeah, we're gonna play a couple of commercials. When we come back, we're going to play Boston Blackie. Stick around. Okay, it's time for Boston Blackie, my favorite detective series of all time. Dick Calamar played Boston Blackie on the radio. We have an episode from January 21st, 1947. This is called The Search for Jim Gary, Part 1 of Boston Blackie.
National Insurance Company, good morning.
Mr. Adams, please.
Mr. Adams, one moment, please.
Adams speaking.
Yes, Mr. Adams, go ahead, sir.
Hello, Mr. Adams, this is John Rodney.
Oh, hello, Rodney. Where are you calling from?
Terre Haute this time, but I got here too late. Jim Gary worked here, all right, but that was 3 years ago.
Oh, too bad. Any idea where he went, though?
It seems he went on from here to Birmingham. He must have still had the jewels with him. They never turned up here. I'll phone you again from Birmingham. Hello, Mr. Adams. This is Rodney in Birmingham.
Oh, yes, Rodney. Any luck?
Well, he's not in Birmingham, but he was 6 months ago. Seems he was mixed up in a shooting here similar to the killing in Omaha 6 years ago.
Another jewel case, eh?
No, not this time. No jewels were taken.
Well, where to now, or are you giving up?
I'm never going to give up, Mr. Adams. I'll find him.
But how'll you know him when you do? You still have no positive identification.
Well, I may get it. I just found out that he had a grandmother in Greensboro. If she's still alive, maybe she can tell me something about him. I'll phone you again from there. Hello, Mr. Adams?
Yes?
This is Rodney in Greensboro.
Oh, hello, Rodney. Did you find Jim Gary's grandmother?
Yeah, I found her all right.
Good.
But she couldn't tell me much about him. She's old, very feeble, practically can't see.
I hope you didn't tell her that her grandson is wanted for robbery and murder.
No, I couldn't. I said I was an old school friend of his. And we got a break, Mr. Adams. She gave me a picture of him.
A picture? That's the one thing we've needed all these years. Good work, Rodney.
Thanks, but that isn't all. His grandmother says the last she heard of him, he was in New York. She thinks he's still there. I'm taking a plane out of here this afternoon. I think I'll find him at last, Mr. Adams.
It won't be easy, Rodney. New York is a big city.
Yeah, but I got Jim Gary's picture now. And I've trailed him for 5 years without it. If he isn't in New York, I'll find him somewhere else. I'll never give up.
And now on to Dick Calmer as Boston Blackie. Enemy to those who make him an enemy. Friend to those who have no friend.
Jody, I have to hide behind that newspaper all afternoon. Can't you talk to me a little? I'm lonesome.
What do you mean you're lonesome, Jean? Don't I sit home with you all day?
Yeah, with a newspaper in front of your face. That's charming, isn't it? You read all day and you're never home at night.
Hmm? Well, isn't that too bad? What do we do for money if I stayed home 24 hours a day? Where do you think your clothes come from, the 5 and 10? The kind of work I do pays good money, and I do a good job, too.
All right.
Where was I? Hey, there's something in the paper here about the job I did night before last.
Yes, I know. I saw it. An old man was killed in that fire, Joe.
So? Was that my fault?
You set the fire.
Come here, you.
Let go of me.
I ought to do more than slap you. And I will next time you say that out loud.
I'm sorry, Joe. I didn't mean to.
You don't mean to do a lot of things.
Look, Joe, I don't have to take a beating from you. I know too much about you, who you are and where you're from.
You.
Don't you hit me again, Joe, ever. You're a professional firebug and a murderer, and I can prove it, too. I can tell the police all about you and your past.
Let me tell you something about your future, baby. You're the only one in the world who knows who I really am, and that's no good. I'd forget it if I were you, and quick. Before people forget you ever lived, baby.
Get that alarm box number, will you, Bill?
Yeah, sure, Lieutenant.
Probably not for us. But you can never tell where that firebug's going to strike next.
It's box 234, Lieutenant. Not in our district. Wonder if the police will ever catch that nut, Lieutenant, huh?
I think they will. There's a man killed in that fire night before last. He'll get the guy who set that fire and get him for murder, too.
Well, I sure hope to get him soon.
Lieutenant.
Hey, look who's coming into the firehouse. It's our old friend Blackie.
And my friend Mary Wesley. Hello there, folks.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Wesley, how are you? It's been so long since you and Blackie been down here, I was afraid maybe you preferred police headquarters.
Oh, there's more excitement here, but more fun down there when Inspector Faraday starts talking. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Blackie. Miss Wesley.
Hello, Bill.
Hey, the phone, Bill. Get it, will you?
Yeah, sure, Lieutenant.
Having a lot of trouble with that firebug, Lieutenant?
Yeah, plenty, Blackie. But the police won't let him run loose long.
I hope not.
What? Yeah, you bet. Hey, Lieutenant, fire in a rooming house at 624 Cannon Street. Big one.
Bill, ring the verbal alarm button. So long, Miss Wesley. Come on, Mary, let's get out of here. So long, Lieutenant.
So long, Blackie.
Hey, Lieutenant, the alarm was sent in from box 454. That's on the corner near 624 Cannon Street, all right?
Well, let's get out.
All right. All right, you guys.
Come on, get a move on, you fellas. Driver at 624 Cannon Street. Bob, outside and stop traffic. Quick, Smith, run on that car side. Come on, get out, get out.
Blackie, why do we have to stop by your apartment when it would be much more fun going by that fire on Kenner Street?
There are three reasons, Mary. It's against the law to follow fire engines. I have to pick up my mail, and we have a theater date in 45 minutes.
Oh, but I just love fires.
Hey, wait a minute, Mary. You want the firebugs you're looking for, are you?
Well,
No, no, on second thought, you don't look it. Say, what's this on the floor?
Looks like a piece of paper.
It's not only a piece of paper, it's a note. From the doorman that just went off duty.
Harry doesn't trust anyone with messages for you, does he? What's this one about?
It doesn't seem to be anything important. Mr. John Rodney was here to see me. He says I can get in touch with him at 624 Kenner Street.
Who's John Rodney?
I don't know. Never heard of him. There's certainly something familiar about that address, 624 Kenner Street.
Blackie, that's where the fire is.
That's right, Mary. Huh. There's a fire at 624 Kenner Street, and I get a note to meet a man at that address. The coincidence is a little too much.
Too much what?
Too much coincidence. And too much to ignore. Come on, Mary, we're going to that fire.
But I thought it was against the law.
It is, but if the police say anything, we'll tell them that they were there by invitation.
Here comes the salvage crew, Inspector Faraday.
A lot it'll have to salvage, Lieutenant. That house is just about gone.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is, Inspector. Probably another arson job, too.
I wouldn't doubt it. We've got to get that fire back and get them fast.
Sure wish we could. This is a fifth fire in the last 2 weeks. And in every one, the building's been almost a total loss.
Yeah, and in that fire the night before last, a man died. Any fatalities this time?
Not that we know of yet. This is a rooming house. The landlord gave us a list of boarders. Yeah. So far, they've all been accounted for, with the exception of... Hey, who's in that car just pulled up?
I don't know, but he better get out of here. Hey, you, keep moving. Get that car out of here before...
Faraday, at last they've got you directing traffic.
Blackie, no, it can't be. Blackie, don't I have enough trouble now?
You know that much?
No.
Now, don't burn up, Faraday. The fire department is busy enough already. Hello there, Lieutenant.
Hello, Blackie. Beat it, Blackie.
Oh, no, Inspector. Mary and I have an invitation to this fire, and she decided to watch it from the car.
Well, you watch it from your car, too. Only park it on the other side of town.
Oh, now, Faraday, you wouldn't spoil any fun of mine, would you? I just love fire engines. It's all right with you if I hang around, isn't it, Lieutenant?
Yeah, I suppose so. Nothing to see anymore, though, Blackie. We have the fire about under control.
Why did you have Faraday here, Lieutenant? Just for laughs?
You know very well why I'm here, Blackie. There's a fire back loose in this town, and a man was killed in that fire the night before last. But I'm looking for a killer. Who invited you here?
Well, Faraday, somebody left me a note telling me to come to this address.
The firebox sent it, I suppose.
No, I doubt that. It was from a man named John Rodney. Do you know him?
No.
Blackie, did you say John Rodney? Yes, he lived here, didn't he?
This was a boarding house. A lot of people lived here. And one of them was a John Rodney. I have a list of all the tenants in the building. They're all accounted for except one. And the only one missing is John Rodney.
Police department.
Let me speak to the officer in charge. Hurry.
What do you want to speak to him about, lady?
It's important. It's about those fires.
Huh? The one set by the firebug?
Yes. Now may I speak
just
to him?
Just a minute, lady. I'll connect you with the head of the homicide department, Inspector Faraday. Yes?
Inspector Faraday, this is Jean Marsh. I know who's setting those fires, and I have proof, too.
Yeah? How do you know all these things?
Well, there isn't time to tell you. Come to 1414 Well Road, and I'll...
Oh. You'll what?
Well, I'll explain all about it. You see, it's not as simple as you think.
Look, you know who the firebug is, don't you?
Yes, I mean, no, not exactly. I'm not sure. I'll have to think it over a little more. Goodbye.
Oh. Hello, Jean.
Hello, Joe. I didn't hear you come in.
I know you didn't.
You've been here long?
Long enough.
Joe, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're sorry. So am I. I'm sorry you got something to be sorry about. You were calling the cops about me, weren't you?
Yes, but I didn't...
I heard what you told them. And believe me, you're going to be plenty sorry I did, baby.
All right, that's very dramatic organ music there, Lisa. I think that's a Hammond organ there.
I think you're right, Carl. You're definitely right.
That's the first part of Boston Blackie, January 21st, 1947, The Search for Jim Gary, starring Dick Kalmar. We'll have more of that after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
12:35 in the morning, Lisa. We're playing Boston Blackie. I got to tell you, I've told this story on the air before. Boston Blackie, my favorite radio show. I had no idea that I would like this show. It was the flip side of a cassette that I bought that had Lights Out on side A and Boston Blackie on side B. And I was like, man, I really want that Lights Out episode, but Boston Blackie, what's that? I had no idea what it was. And then I saved up enough money. You know, I had my paper route and some other things that I did. And I saved up the $4.95 or whatever it was for the cassette. And the very first thing I did was put Lights Out on because that's what I wanted. And then one day I was like, I'll throw this Boston Blackie on. And that became my favorite show. I was like ravenously collecting Boston Blackie after that. Learned all about it and the fact that Dick Kalmar was married to Dorothy Kilgallen, investigative reporter and columnist. She was on What's My Line for many years. And our fun fact is about her this week. If you haven't had a chance to read that about Boston Blackie, Dick Kalmar, and his relationship with Dorothy Kilgallen. But that's another reason why I think people are really going to like the Classic Radio Club, because if you join the Classic Radio Club, you're going to get sent 10 classic radio shows every month, and you're not going to really know what those shows are. It's a surprise. It's an absolute surprise. I pick the shows, put them on 5 CDs for you, and you are going to discover things you had no idea you were going to just love, like what happened to me with Boston Blackie. Plus, I'm going to send you liner notes, all kinds of fun stuff, and you will get these 5 CDs with 10 shows every month mailed to your house. So to learn more about the Classic Radio Club, just go to ClassicRadioClub.com. That's the website, ClassicRadioClub.com. Lisa is a member, and she gets, and your dad is just loving all these CDs, right?
He sure is. I'm loving the CDs.
Yeah, does your mom like them too?
Not as much as my dad,
yeah,
but like you said, it exposes you to shows that you wouldn't necessarily have been exposed to. And you learn a little bit about what you like and what you don't. And you can appreciate some new things and build your own collection, which is really nice as well.
Yeah. And the quality of every show I'm going to send you is going to be tremendous, because we have the master recordings of these shows, because we license these shows from the owners and estates. So they give us the master recordings. And that's what you're going to get every single month on 5 CDs. In a collector case plus liner notes, go to ClassicRadioClub.com. All right, it's time now for part two, the conclusion of Boston Blackie.
And now back to Boston Blackie. John Rodney, insurance investigator, uncovers a picture of fugitive Jim Gary and feels that his 5-year search for the culprit is nearing an end. On his arrival in New York, he takes a room at 624 Kenner Street, then sends a note to Boston Blackie to meet him at that address. A firebug is loose in the city, however, and by the time Blackie gets to 624 Kenner Street, the rooming house is in flames, and Rodney is missing. It is the next morning now, and as we return to our story, the missing Rodney is phoning his own office.
Hello, Mr. Adams.
Yes, this is Adams.
This is Rodney, Mr. Adams, reporting from New York.
Oh, yes, Rodney. How are things going? Any trace of Jim Gary?
Well, not exactly. I want to report that I've been burned out of my room at 624 Kenner Street.
Burned out?
Yeah, last night the whole house went up in flames.
Oh,
I'm okay. Only I got a tough break about Gary's picture.
What do you mean? What's happened to the picture?
Well, it was lost in the fire.
What?
Definitely lost. My papers and extra clothing along with it.
Well, better send me a report on the fire in as much detail as you can. We'll want it for the files.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've just finished typing it up. I'll mail it to you this afternoon.
Good. Well, keep me posted, Rodney.
And don't worry, Mr. Adams. Picture or no picture, I'll get Jim Gary.
Well, good luck to you, Rodney.
Thanks, Mr. Adams. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yes? I'm Boston Blackie. You sent for me, Mr. Rodney?
Oh, yeah, I did, but that was yesterday.
I know, but there was a fire at your address last night, and you weren't home.
and it's taken me until now to find you.
Glad that you did. I was just about to call you.
Oh, then you still want to see me, huh?
Well, I just wanted to explain that note of last night. You see, I did have a reason to talk to you then. I had a photograph I wanted to show you.
A photograph? Well, why did you want to show it to me?
Well, I understand you know most everybody in this town, and I had a picture of a fellow, Jim Gary, wanted in Omaha for murder and robbery 6 years ago.
But why can't you show me the picture now?
It was lost in the fire last night.
Oh, gee, that's too bad.
You don't know how bad. It was my only clue to his identity. The only picture, too.
Don't the police have his fingerprints?
No. And I'm not working with the police. I'm with the National Insurance Company.
Oh.
The police gave up the murder trail 5 years ago, but the jewels Gary stole have never shown up.
I see. You think he stashed them somewhere?
Yeah, we're sure that he has. We're trying to recover them for the claim we paid on them.
And you've been trying for 5 years?
Ever since I've been with the company. And just when I might have been near him, that firebug sets my rooming house ablaze. What a break.
Well, what makes you think the firebug set that fire?
Well, the police think it was the work of a firebug. Don't you?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe it was Jim Gary.
Hey, it could be, yeah. I got to town only yesterday, but I did ask a few questions around. Say, maybe one of Gary's cronies got to him and told him I was here and with a picture.
And he set fire to your rooming house to destroy the picture. It's very simple.
Yeah, you're right, Blackie. I'd better put that in the report I'm making to my company. I want them to be as convinced as I am that I'm close to Gary now. I don't want them to tell me to quit after 5 years.
You're not blaming the firebug in your report, then, but Jim Gary.
Yeah. Would you like to see my report?
Yes, it would.
There it is.
Thanks. Uh-huh. Fire of obvious incendiary origin. Small frame house went fast. Fire started in second floor corridor just outside northwest room. Papers carrying stories of firebug at work in city. You're going to add the part about Gary, huh?
Yes, I am.
Well, still going to be a tough job finding Jim Gary, whatever he calls himself now. This is a big city.
I know that, Blackie, but I spent 5 years tracing that guy, and now I'm positive I've caught up with him. And I'm not leaving here either until he leaves with me.
Joe, what are you doing? Something wrong with your gun?
No, there's nothing wrong with it. It works. I just want to be sure everything's okay when my car gets here.
Joe, couldn't you...
Relax, baby. Relax. Like I've been telling you, I heard what you told the cops on the phone. I just can't take any more chances with you. So when the car comes, we'll take a ride in the country.
Joe, you really mean it? You're really going to do this to me?
Sorry, baby, but I have to. I just can't trust you anymore. All right, there's the car now. Come on, get your hat on.
All right.
Wearing a cute one, huh?
Do you mind?
Wish you wouldn't, you. Look too pretty in it.
Well, then maybe...
It's not going to make any difference. Come on, I'll get you caught on and hurry.
I'm hurrying as fast as I can.
Oh, yeah, you're taking your own sweet time.
Wouldn't you, in a spot like this?
No, I wouldn't. And I wouldn't take it as calm as you either. You sure are taking this calm. I got to give you credit, baby. You really don't seem scared.
I'm not.
No? See this gun?
Uh-huh.
One wacky move and I'll let you have it here and we'll forget about the ride. Come on, you got your coat on. Let's go. And take that pocketbook of yours with you. I don't want it around here.
Joe, please.
Come on, quit stalling.
Joe, you are serious. You are going to kill me.
You were serious when you called the cops. Come on, let's get it over with.
Sure, Joe. We'll get it over with right now.
What do you mean, we'll get it over with? Oh. Gee, baby. That wasn't right. It's not the way I planned it. Where'd you get the gun?
From my pocketbook. The one you made me pick up.
Open up! Open up in there! This is Inspector Faraday.
Just a moment.
What's going on in here?
Oh. You got here a little too late, Inspector. There's your firebug lying on the floor. I think he's dead.
You shot him, huh?
With this gun. Here, take it.
Okay.
And take me with it. I was afraid of him, but I'm not afraid of what you'll do to me. You see, I killed him
in self-defense.
Blackie, this is Jean Marsh.
How do you do, Miss Marsh?
She just shot and killed a man she claims is the firebug.
How do you know he was the firebug, Miss Marsh?
First, because he told me so, Blackie. But I knew it before he told me. I heard him talking on the phone, arranging to set the fires.
On the phone? With whom?
The people who owned the buildings. They wanted the insurance money for their properties. And they paid him well.
Name the fires your husband set, Mrs. Marsh.
Well, I...
You were the firebug's wife?
Yes.
Oh.
I'd be his late wife if I hadn't had a gun in my purse.
Yes, yes. We know all about that, Mrs. Marsh. Your self-defense plea will hold up. We found your husband with a gun still in his hand. Now, tell us what fires your husband set.
The one on Oak Street last week, that office building.
Uh-huh.
That abandoned hotel 2 nights later.
Yeah?
That garage on Sunday.
What about the one a couple of nights ago where that man was killed?
Yeah, he set that one, too. He even bragged about what a good job it was.
Mrs. Marsh, if you knew your husband was setting these fires last week, why did you wait until today to phone the police?
Well, he'd never killed anyone in a fire until the last one. Began to work on me, my husband a murderer. I couldn't let him go on and maybe kill someone else.
But you did let him set that fire at 624 Kenneth Street last night.
No, he didn't set that one.
How do you know?
Well, he wasn't working last night. He always told me when he did a job.
Your husband didn't set that fire on Kenneth Street last night?
That's what she said, Faraday.
Well, if he didn't, who did?
I know who did. Jim Gary.
Jim Gary? Who's he?
A man wanted for murder and robbery in Omaha 6 years ago, being sought by John Rodney, an insurance investigator.
The same John Rodney who had a room at Kenneth Street?
Mm-hmm. You know where he is now, don't you?
Sure. We found him in a hotel this morning. So this Gary set fire to that house on Kenneth Street. Why?
To destroy the only picture of Jim Gary in existence. Rodney had it in his room on Kenneth Street, and Gary knew it. Mrs. Marsh, your husband's real name wasn't Gary, was it?
No, Blackie. Marsh was his real name.
Are you sure?
Yes, I've known Joe since he was 16. We went to school together right here in the city. Joe never even been in Omaha.
It's too bad. For a minute, I thought I'd found Rodney's Jim Gary for him.
I don't know anyone in this town named Gary. Or anyone in town wanted in Omaha for anything.
You wouldn't. But Gary's here, I'm positive. And so is Rodney. Now, if you just...
Wait a minute. Yeah?
Inspector Faraday.
Yes?
This is Lieutenant Barnes of the fire department.
Oh, yes.
You asked for a report on that fire on Kenner Street. Well, the building just cooled down enough for us to make an investigation.
Good. Did you find anything?
Nothing we didn't suspect in the first place. It was incendiary, all right. Started in the hallway in the second floor. No trace of who started it, though.
Okay, Chief. I've got some news for you, but I'll call you back. Thanks for the report.
No trouble. Bye.
Bye. Well, Blackie, the fire department finally got into that house on Kenneth Street and found out it was arson.
Yes, I heard the conversation. Well, guess Rodney was right in his report. See you later.
Hey, Blackie, where are you going?
Well, all of a sudden, I know exactly where to find the man Rodney is looking for. Hello, Rodney.
Well, Blackie, come in.
Thanks.
What are you all smiles about?
I have some good news for you, Rodney.
Oh, you have? Oh, about Jim Gary?
I think so.
Well, it's nice to get some encouragement. Inspector Faraday down at headquarters says I'll never find Gary, even if I look for him another 5 years.
Faraday's been wrong about a lot of things, a lot of times.
Well, I know he's wrong about this. Oh, maybe I am sort of temporarily stopped by the loss of that picture in the fire last night, but I'll find Gary just the same, because I'm never going to stop looking for him.
I know you're not, Rodney, and I'm going to help you find him, too.
Oh, thanks. I'd appreciate that. But maybe you'll run out of patience, Blackie. I may be looking for him for a long time.
You don't have to look for him, Rodney, because you're the man you're looking for. You're Jim Gary. Surprised?
Yeah.
Do you know how I know you're Jim Gary?
Do you know I am?
Yes. Now, I'll tell you how I know. That report on the fire you sent to your company, you revealed the origin of the fire in that report.
Yeah, I did.
Too bad you did, Rodney. Or maybe I should start calling you Gary now. Because you filed your report this morning, and it wasn't until this afternoon the building cooled off enough for the fire department to go into it.
Oh, I see.
No, I see. You had no way of knowing where that fire started unless you started it yourself. And I know why you started it yourself. To destroy the last bit of evidence that you were Jim Gary, the man you've been looking for.
You're very clever, Blackie.
I want to congratulate
you. And I want to warn you, Gary, don't reach for anything, a gun, a knife, or anything to throw at me. This gun of mine throws bullets awful fast.
Really?
Yes. Just don't try anything.
No. I'm not going to try anything, Blackie. But I don't think I'm going anywhere with you.
No, yes, you are. Come on.
No, no, Blackie. I don't think so. You're right about everything but one. I'm not coming with you.
Oh, but you are.
Oh, Blackie, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but... I've taken... poison.
Gary. Gary! What a guy he must have been. He just couldn't stand being himself.
Blackie, my name is Adams. I'm with the National Insurance Company.
Oh, yes, Adams. I think your man Rodney mentioned you a couple of times. You were his boss, I think.
Yes, I'm the one who gave him his job with the company. He was a clever man, Blackie.
Yes, he was. Getting a job looking for himself was a swell idea.
He was clever and he was patient. He waited almost a year and proved himself to be a good investigator before he asked to be put on the Jim Gary case. And he seemed to be so resourceful that we put him on that one case exclusively.
Getting that photograph of himself from his grandmother was Sammy's stroke of genius. That was the last possible clue to his real identity. He didn't destroy it then because he was afraid his grandmother might report that she'd given him the picture.
Yes, that's right.
Were you suspicious when he reported that the picture had been lost in the fire?
Not a bit. I trusted the man implicitly. That man was a marvel, Blackie.
Yes, he was brilliant, all right. But like all men whose minds are twisted, Jim Gary couldn't take it when things were turned against him.
There is Boston Blackie, my favorite radio series of all time. Just loved Dick Calmer as Boston Blackie. But, you know, he was not the first actor to play Boston Blackie on the radio. Because when they decided to bring Boston Blackie to the radio, they went for the actor playing Boston Blackie in the movies, and that was Chester Morris. And for a very short summer season, as a summer replacement for Amos and Andy, they hired Chester Morris to play Boston Blackie on the radio. And then it was very popular. They couldn't get him to continue to do it because he was making the movies, so they hired Dick Calmar to play the role of Boston Blackie, and I think there was about 300 episodes. I have almost 300 episodes.
I believe that you
of
do.
Boston Blackie. I think I've heard every single one of them. I just
multiple times.
Yeah,
I'm
just
sure.
I just like Boston
That's
Blackie.
A good one.
I mean, you know, it's a great series. All right, well, hope you enjoyed that.